live from the Polar Vortex. It's the only movie podcast in existence. I'm your freezing cold host, Dan Leo. And with me, as always, is
Robert Mecki, also known as the B-host. And it's a solid 50 degrees at night right now in Austin, Texas.
It is a solid -2 right now where I am at. And
ouch.
Tomorrow it's a high of -13 with a low of -24. So
stay bundled. You know, it'll keep you warm if you buy multiple viewing angles t-shirts and put them all on at once.
Right. I'm wearing viewing angles t-shirts just like one on top of another. They're so soft. They make me feel so important.
So soft, so warm.
Such everything. All right. Well, let's get into the episode. Today, we're tackling another Oscar nom. Right, Robert? We're looking at The Favorite, the newest movie from Yorgo Lanthimos. The
yes.
Greek director in charge of such movies as Killing of Sacred Deer and the other one.
The Lobster.
And I think he's Dogtooth. That's another one that he has.
I have not seen Dogtooth, though.
I have also not seen Dogtooth.
I hear it's good.
But
I did not know that he was Greek. That's some fun trivia.
Oh, maybe I was just like maybe interpreting that. That sounds great,
though,
right?
Are you just bullshitting?
I mean, I think he's Greek, but I can't remember ever looking it up. I just remember hearing or maybe just interpreting.
No, you're right. It
no,
is
he's
Greek.
Yeah,
he's a Greek film director. Yeah.
Woo. All right.
Cutting it close there.
Yeah. Hey, it's okay. Greece can't hear this. They don't pay their internet bills.
Yeah, I was going to say Greece can't afford to listen to us.
Yeah, we're free and they still can't afford to listen to it. What is like the old joke? Like, I've got -$10 in my bank account. I need $10 to be broke. Guess who said it? And you'll get a free t-shirt. Just kidding. I'm not going to hold anybody to that. All right. Let's start talking about stuff.
Yeah. Keep
let's
the high
get
news.
Right into. Well, let's do the box office first. It's pretty standard. Look, just say it. It's Glass, The Upside, Aquaman, Glass at 18. The Upside at 11, Aquaman at 7. Man, Aquaman still has legs. Sure, why not? I get it.
Dude, yeah, Aquaman. Well, Aquaman has officially made more money than The Dark Knight Rises. So Aquaman is now the highest grossing DC film of all time, which I was definitely not expecting. Like, who would have thought that of all the characters DC has, Aquaman is going to be the box office king of all time for them?
You know what? And I'm not sure what that says about anything, because Aquaman obviously is not a bankable project. James Wan is a good director, but I wouldn't say that people are going out to see this movie because it has James Wan's hand behind it.
I think they're going to see it because word of mouth is just that it's a fun movie and it's ridiculous. And also, I think Jason Momoa is a bankable actor at this point, more so than I think anybody was expecting.
Yeah, but what else has he really been in, you know?
Game of Thrones.
You think that it's people who know him from Game of Thrones are coming in because, oh, yeah, I know that guy, and they're coming to see it?
I mean, I think that's a decent amount of people, but I also think it's just that he is, one, super attractive, and two, very charismatic.
Yeah, that probably helps.
Yeah. Plus, also, I do think that Aquaman is just unique as a property because of it. When was the last time we got like an entirely, well, not entirely, but like a mainly underwater film? Like Shark Boy and Lava Girl. Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Finding Nemo. That's fair.
Yeah. I mean, they're both mostly animation. So.
Yeah. But yeah. I think it's mostly word of mouth that this
Joss
movie is
Boot.
Writing on.
The Hunt for Red October. Those are very specific examples.
Those are
but
both
I think
submarine
right.
films, yes.
I think what this means really is that the consumers of the world want tones more similar to what Marvel is doing right now, which is not very dark. I think that DC has probably realized that there is a market for darker superhero movies, maybe more philosophically minded, a little bit more intense in terms of the plot and the ramifications. But it's a smaller market. If you want to make $1 billion, you have to have a bankable star, a lot of special effects, and it has to be fun.
Yeah. Like, I don't think that, like, Zack Snyder's DC Universe, I don't think was ever going to be a tentpole franchise like Warner Brothers wanted to be. I don't think Zack Snyder was ever trying to set it up to be like that. I think he kind of saw the opportunity to make something that cost a lot of money and just run with it for as long as he could. But I do hope that with the success of films like Aquaman and the news that DC is going to be focusing mainly on solo outings like this, because this is clearly what's succeeding for them moving forward, that it lets them kind of do more experimental, darker superhero films in the future that can be propped up by these bigger tentpole films. And I'm thinking of, I want to see DC take movies like what Fox has been doing with Deadpool and Logan. Like, Deadpool makes a lot of money. I think Logan made a lot of money, but they still didn't make as much money as like the X-Men films did. Like, those were big event films.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that we'll start to see, hopefully, what this like single-minded or this single character strategy will help us develop different types of movies. Because I think with the Joaquin Phoenix Joker movie, with some of the other titles that they got going on, the new Harley Quinn stuff, it shows that they're willing to make movies out of universe, which is kind of nice. You know, at this point, we did the whole Justice League thing. I guess let's forget about that for a while. Let's build out some characters, put some money in the pockets of these executives who are so afraid. And then once they're big and rich and kind of like, yeah, let's take some risks, you know.
Yeah.
Let's maybe focus on some smaller stuff. And I think that's where the Batman movies are probably going to come in. I think Batman is probably out of the shared universe for a while. I think they're going to have some solo outings where they're going to try and take him in a different directions stylistically.
Yeah. I don't think that I think all these movies are still technically going to be part of the same shared universe, but I hope that we don't see a team up like Justice League again for at least another 5 to 6 years. But I think that I think studios are kind of starting to realize that chasing the Avengers magic, like that shared universe, cinematic universe magic, is just not worth it anymore. Because you've got Universal Studios dumping their dark universe. You've got DC realizing that Justice League just isn't going to happen, at least not for another 8 years or so.
Back to the animated movies.
Yeah. But honestly, when they do team up again, eventually, I hope they get James Gunn to direct it. I think that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, I think James Gunn might be the missing link here to see what he does with Suicide Squad 2.
I can't wait.
I'm honestly also very excited. And I think it'll be interesting with this Birds of Prey movie that has recently been teased to us. I think that that looks interesting. Because it's got bankable Scar. It's got Margot Robbie. It's got Ewan McGregor. Right there, that's a movie that will sell.
Yeah. And I mean, tickets. Suicide Squad 1 is critically derided as it was. Is still hugely profitable. And just from the box office numbers, that's not even counting all the merchandise, all the fucking Hot Topic sales that they had from the Harley Quinn and Jared Leto Joker properties. But I'm super curious about Birds of Prey, because I've been seeing on Twitter a lot of rumors that Birds of Prey is going to be a hard R crime drama. And maybe. We don't have any confirmation of that yet. And we just got our first teaser of it, which is barely a teaser. It was more of teasers like this are always hilarious to me, because it's not a teaser. It's a test screening, a costume screening test that they just compiled into a YouTube video.
Yeah, no, exactly. It is. It's a screen test. It's exactly that. It's all right, you're in your costumes. You're in character, quote unquote.
Yeah.
Let's take some pictures of what you look like.
Yeah. Let's put that on YouTube. Call it a teaser for a teaser.
Yeah, I'll be more interested when the next trailer comes out. I think they got to start definitively making some more R-rated comic book movies. And I really think Zack Snyder probably set us back a little bit with Watchmen. I think Watchmen is pretty good.
Dude, Watchmen is fucking great.
Watchmen is pretty good. I'll say if you take away the scenes added from the director's cut, it's not as strong of a movie, but it's still pretty good. There's some glaring issues that I think we all have with that. But I think that for him to tackle Watchmen so early on, when it's we didn't have that many R-rated comic book movies before that.
Oh, yeah.
And it was in the kind of swing of all the other comic book movies coming out. I think to go right for that with a hard R comic book movie, I think that probably set us back a little bit with more serious R-rated comic book movies. Because even, you know, what we have Deadpool now, which is a comedy.
Yeah.
And was pitched as the only way we can make this movie is to make it R.
Yeah.
And I don't think that there's another, besides Watchmen, I don't think there's another thing that you could do like that.
I mean, Logan?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And they really, make the argument that's Fox. That, like, Blade. And that's also Hugh Jackman saying, hey, I'm going to take a massive pay cut to Hugh make Jackman, this R.
Yeah, he sacrificed a lot to get that movie made. But I feel like Blade kind of, I mean, Blade was technically a comic book film. I know a lot of people are like, even today,
so is Spawn.
Yeah, they're still pretty surprised that Blade is a superhero movie.
He's in the Marvel universe, right?
He is, yeah. He's a Marvel property. And I'm still waiting for a, goddamn, dude, I'm waiting for a Blade reboot. Like, I'm sad. I feel like it's never going to happen now that Disney's breaking ties with Netflix. But, oof, I would love to see Mahershala Ali play Blade. That's my dream cast. Yeah, that's my dream casting for a Blade reboot.
Yeah, like Wesley Snipes. Like, just get Mahershala Ali built up a little bit more. And then you basically have a Wesley Snipes who is a good actor. Which Wesley Snipes is not a bad actor. But, and there's a certain amount of hamminess that goes with being Blade. Like, motherfucker's always trying to ice skate uphill. Like, what kind of what kind of line is that to have in a movie?
Thank you, Guillermo del Toro.
Yeah, it's hilarious. You know, he did Blade 2, didn't he? Did he do Blade 1 as well?
Oh, no, you're right. He only did Blade 2.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, what's an interesting little connection there is that the guy who plays... the bad guy in Blade, he is Mahershala Ali's partner in the latest season of True Detective.
Oh, really?
Steven Dorff, yeah.
Everything's connected. They all share the same agents.
Yeah. Oh, man. Kris Kristofferson was in Blade.
Yes, he was.
That's correct. All right, let's stop riffing on comic book movies, or everyone has already tuned out. So we're coming back. What's the toss-up this week is Sylvester Stallone says he will one day finish his Edgar Allan Poe biopic script, and I say, only if you demand to play him.
Yeah, I want Sylvester Stallone to direct and star in his Edgar Allan Poe biopic.
Oh, yeah. And it's,
what do you think it's going to be called?
It's going to be called Poe. It's definitely not going to be called Edgar. It's definitely going to be called Poe. No, Ellen. Hold on.
It's going to be called Ellen Poe.
Or it's going to be called... See, I feel like it can't be called the name of one of his books, because then people will just think it's about that. Yeah. It's like the storyline is that. So it's got to be like an amalgam.
What if it's a quote from one of his books?
Could be. Are there any famous Edgar Allan Poe quotes besides that's quote, his quote heart the under there?
It's his heart underneath the floorboards.
It's his heart over there.
There's a fine line between like Stallone impressions and our Schwarzenegger. It's just like a little bit of throat, like
Yeah, well, because Schwarzenegger he's got an accent, whereas Stallone is like, what even is Stallone's accent?
He's like a birth defect that like, so half of his face is like numb. Or like, what? It's like paralyzed a little. Yeah.
Is it right?
Yeah.
I thought he just gave him. Fuck.
So every time someone's doing a Sylvester Stallone impression, they're doing an impression of a disabled person.
Yeah. Holy shit. I thought that was one of those situations where he just gave himself an accent to like stand out in Hollywood.
Yeah. No, that's an Italian accent. Duh. Yeah.
What are you talking about?
What? Sylvester Stallone. That's an Italian accent.
He was... No, no, it's not.
Complications suffered by Stallone's mother during labor forced her obstetricians to use two pairs of forceps during his birth. Misuse of these forceps accidentally severed a nerve and caused paralysis in parts of Stallone's face. As a result, the lower left side of his face is paralyzed, including parts of his lip, tongue, and chin. An accident which gave him his signature snarling look and slurred speech. And he was baptized Catholic.
Good to know.
Yeah.
That's not a fucking Italian accent, then.
Yeah, I know. It was a joke.
I can't tell, dude.
You can't tell what the jokes are anymore?
Yeah.
After every Italian person that we've mentioned on this podcast, you've given the name of the last name of a pasta.
The last Italian person that we mentioned on the show was Luca Giardelli's. And it's been a while since we talked about him. Did you watch Suspiria?
No, I haven't seen it yet.
Okay.
Because of various issues. Oh, it should be streaming on Amazon Prime by now.
Probably.
And it's not.
I want Sylvester Stallone to direct a Suspiria remake. That's what I want to see.
Really?
Yeah. But I want it to be about like a male ballet school.
Yeah.
I want it to be hyper masculine.
I'm with you on this to a certain point.
What's the point?
Do like I'm
with
you.
Where's
the cutoff? I think it's not the worst idea you've ever had is to do a male reboot of Suspiria with Sylvester Stallone directing and starring as Tilda Swinton's role as the head like warlock.
And also the psychiatrist.
And also the psychiatrist in heavy makeup.
Yeah. Sylvester Stallone, except this time gender swap the psychiatrist.
Right.
So that
every single role.
Yeah. So a psychiatrist is a woman, but it's still just played by Sylvester Stallone in heavy makeup.
Yeah. Don't even reshoot it. Just digitally edit all of the actors in. Keep the same shots. Shoot every. That would be an interesting movie if they just put the people on top of the other people.
Get Tom York to do the music again.
Yeah, definitely. Watching the first scene, it was good music.
Yeah, Tom York was the best part of that movie.
Yeah. All right, I got nothing else to say on this Sylvester Stallone stuff.
Yeah, I just, I'm super curious, but I want him to put out his last Rambo film first. Apparently that's the one where he fights the drug cartels.
Yeah, and what are the odds that this isn't racist? Like...
Oh,
what are the odds that it's like not super jingoistic and it's not like Sylvester Stallone just like killing Mexicans?
Pretty low. I feel like, I had to give it. I had to do some calculations in my head, figure out the proper odds.
Right,
pretty low.
pretty low. I'm still very interested to see what he could possibly think is that Rambo would be doing to the because. Yeah, whatever. I don't
so
even
like,
know.
Okay, but do you think that when they were filming Rambo 1, like, do you think he understood that it was a critique on America's reception to Vietnam veterans? Or do you think that he was just like, yeah, I want to fuck up some cops? Like,
it's definitely the first one. Right?
You think that he understood that it was a critique on America's law enforcement and how people in society were reacting to traumatized veterans coming home?
Yeah, he co-wrote the screenplay.
Did he really?
He did.
Cool.
He's got talent.
Yeah, I feel so bad. Like, we give Sylvester Stallone so much shit. At least I know I do. But he is a talented person.
Yeah, no, he's one of his movies, a movie that he wrote and star in, became Best Picture. And say what you will about the Best Picture Award and how it's not actually the best movie that came out that year. That's still an achievement.
Oh, yeah. Just to get nominated is an achievement.
Right. Most people don't ever make movies. Most people are never in movies.
Think about that.
Think about that. And then somewhere Sylvester Stallone is there making, like, sitting on a bed made of cash from all the movies that he's ever made.
He's fucking on that bed made of cash.
Definitely. Some of those kids have been conceived on a bed of cash.
Yeah. Fucking Italian stallion.
Yes. All right. And then the low is, which we didn't really have a low. So it's the extended cut of The Crimes of Grindelwald is officially coming to Blu-ray. And I cannot imagine that movie being any longer.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I don't think anybody was even asking for this. Like, you didn't even have like, at least with like the DC movies, you have like the subsect of fans that are like, release the Snyder cut. I don't think anybody was
We have you. They have you, Rob.
Yeah.
You and no one else.
I'm the only one asking for the Snyder cut.
I think you've coined the term Snyder Cut.
I should trademark that. I'll put that on a t-shirt. Was anybody asking for this, though? Like, what could they possibly add to The Crimes of Grindelwald that would make it a better movie?
Besides plot development, I don't know.
But even that, even with plot development, I feel like the plot is just so bad developing it long. It's like if you make a shitty lasagna, like putting it in the oven for longer isn't going to make it taste better.
No, but putting it in the refrigerator and then reheating it the next day might. So I think if you reheat this movie in a microwave, it'll turn out a lot better.
More than that, to make shitty lasagna better, you just got to get shit-faced and then eat it. That'll make it taste better.
No, I think you just fall asleep. I think like all of like the drunk people going to see this movie, I think they probably fell asleep within the first like half an hour.
That's what they need. Instead of releasing an extended cut of The Crimes of Grindelwald, they should just release the thing on Blu-ray that includes like a bottle of vodka.
You open it up and there's just like a very slim bottle of vodka.
Little airplane shot.
Yeah, no, like I was like, it's super like thin. So it can fit in there, not even like, doesn't even have the roundness, just like a piece of paper, but it's got a little cap on the end that you unscrew, you drink it.
What if they just included like a sheet of LSD in the DVD case?
People would buy this movie.
Yeah, I would buy that movie. If there was like little fucking Deathly Hollow symbols on each sheet, like little slit of LSD.
I mean, I think that for the Harry Potter universe, it can only go up from here.
Yeah.
This is by far the worst Harry Potter movie. Yeah,
we I can say that, but you know, I don't know. I don't know what they got planned for the third one. Like, we got three more of these movies coming out?
Jesus Christ! Yeah, the next one will be better because
will it though?
Yes. Did you see it? Did you see this movie?
Crimes of Grindelwald. Yeah.
Yeah.
We talked about it on the podcast. You're a fake fan, dude.
Yeah, no, I'm a fake fan of your movie habits, I guess.
You're a fake fan of our podcast.
Yeah. I think that the third one is geared up to be a lot more interesting than this one. This one was like I think we said in the podcast, it's like a preamble to a movie that I would want to see maybe. But it's just like by the time it gets to the end, I'm like, man, I wasted all that time with all those people that don't matter.
Yeah, we got all these convoluted plot threads about babies getting swapped at birth and drowning at sea. Yeah. And what? Yeah. What the fuck? Who are the Lestrange family and why do they even matter?
I guess these are the real questions.
They're all dead now. So spoiler alert.
Yeah. Every Lestrange is dead in their own way.
They're all dead inside.
Yeah. I mean, that's like the ending of the seventh book. It's just everyone dies.
I love the
everyone
memes.
You love will die off screen.
I love the memes going around on Twitter, though, of J.K. Rowling retconning all this Harry Potter lore. Have you seen any of those?
You don't have a Twitter. Yeah, no, I do have a Twitter. I just don't follow J.K. Rowling because I don't want to. If you're making like changes to your universe by just tweeting, like that's. tweeting is not canon. Like,
have you heard about the change she made that like apparently wizards don't actually ever have to go to the bathroom. They just shit their pants and then vanish the shit away with magic.
Okay, now that makes sense. That is the first logical thing that she has said about this universe. Imagine, that is not exactly how it happens, Rob.
Every wizard, every Harry Potter movie that you've watched, all of those wizards in their robes. They're all shitting themselves.
Yeah.
They're just walking around the school shitting themselves and vanishing the shit away.
It probably doesn't even come out. Like,
that's hilarious.
It's probably just like it's generated like in their colon and they just like disappear like before.
So they all have like tiny portals in their colon.
Well, not like portals. I mean, I don't know how magic works, but you think that this place that has they like tame dragons and stuff and they have books that sort themselves that they don't. Make their poop go away.
But like they have bathrooms in Hogwarts. Like are they literally just decorative
bathrooms?
You're
right.
Like there's literally a ghost in Harry Potter that exists to haunt the bathrooms.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty big flaw in whatever J.K. Rowling is trying to say. Well, I mean,
this wouldn't even be a problem if she didn't say like, hey, guess what? The wizards shit themselves.
Yeah.
Why would you change that? Why would you add that to the lore?
I don't like the idea of like J.K. Rowling just like getting hammered at her home and like taking an Ambien and then just tweeting about Harry Potter.
That's exactly what's happening.
Yeah, exactly. Roseanne will tweet something racist on Ambien. J.K. Rowling will just ruin her entire universe on Ambien. All wizards are descended from Mongolia. Yeah. What? Is that what?
Dobby threw the first brick at the Stonewall riots.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what it'll take to get her to stop it, is her to like make an assertion that is borderline offensive.
You know, like, what's gonna happen too.
Oh yeah, it'll be really cat, like the Berlin Wall was actually a magical rune and stuff. Oh, like, what? Fuck.
We're already getting pretty close by like having wizards exist during like World War II and having like what's his name, Johnny Depp, give all these visions to the wizards about World War II happening. It's like,
yeah,
there's a lot of genocide that happened during that war that you're just kind of gonna kind of breeze over for the sake of a fantasy world.
But yeah, yeah. And what even was the art? So the wizards knew that World War II was going to happen.
Apparently, yes.
And they just let it happen.
They just didn't care. That's about Jews. Up. Like, were there just not Jewish wizards?
I mean, there must be, right? Well,
you would think, but also,
do you think the wizards believe in? I don't think the wizards believe in God. Because yeah,
that's,
of their magic,
that's a fair
right?
point. But like, you can be Jewish and not like Jewish isn't just a religious denomination, right? It's also right. like.
I mean, they have like what are the what's the nice term for mudbloods? Like
muggles?
No, because they have two. Like, it's like Hermione has two muggle parents.
Isn't it just
and
like
she is a witch?
Half-see? I don't know.
Right? Yeah, I don't know the racial dynamics of the wizarding world, but halfsy probably doesn't cut it.
Half breed? I don't know.
Yeah,
half breed is just what I was called in school, so I figured like, right. Oh, cool.
Shout out to like Jake, like Mudblood, like what a, that pretty, I mean, that must be like a slur, like a real life, like slur for somebody, but like
somebody somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. But shout out for her. That sounds bad. Like you would not want to get called a Mudblood.
Oh no.
It'd be like, ugh, like it just sounds bad. And for her to come up with, oh yeah, that's what they call people who are like this.
Yeah.
Or even like squibs, but even like a squib is like a real,
a squib
doesn't sound
is
that
like,
bad.
It's like a squib is just like a blood packet.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's like those things they use for practical effects.
Wait, what is a squib in the Harry Potter universe?
It's like Filch is a squib. He has two. It's the opposite of Hermione. He's got two wizard parents, but he is a muggle. He doesn't have magic.
Oh, yeah. Dude, that's the worst situation. Ooh.
Oh, yeah. That's the darkest Filch. Timeline.
Yeah.
For sure.
It's okay. Arya Stark kills him.
Everybody must pay. All right, well, let's get into the review of the week. And what movie did we see, Rob, or Brian, the good people?
We saw The Favorite, directed
the
by
Favorite.
Yogurt Lanthimos, famous Greek director.
Famous Greek director, smoother than other directors.
Known
smoother,
for directing.
Creamier, and a great source of protein.
He goes great with like honey and blueberries.
Yeah. Ooh, yeah. Honey like Greek yogurt. That's surprisingly good.
Honey and Greek yogurt is amazing. So is honey and blueberry and Greek. Like Greek yogurt on its own, pretty trash, but you can do so much to make it delicious.
Yeah. It's like low. It's like it's got that nice, like creamy stuff. But then if you don't mix it with any kind of
it's
like
just,
fruit,
it's too
it's
sour
tasteless.
On its own.
Yeah,
I feel like.
Yeah, it is kind of sour.
It's kind of like, it's like one step up from just eating fucking sour cream as a snack. No,
it's like the next step, like it's cottage cheese for people who aren't crazy. You ever see people who just like take cottage cheese and they just dig into it with a spoon?
I feel like I
because people do that.
I mean, I've eaten plain cottage cheese as a kid before.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But it's like eating Brussels sprouts or something.
It's not the best, but I was like, I don't know. I was kind of into the texture. I was like, this is interesting. This is better than regular yogurt. It's a little bit chewy.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I guess I shouldn't have brought that up with you because people who eat cottage cheese are crazy.
Are psychopaths. Yeah. To be fair, most of the time I would cut up a mango and put it into the cottage cheese.
Oh, yeah. Because then at that point, it's all mango. It's mango and texture.
Yeah, it was good. But I'm just saying I've eaten plain cottage cheese before.
Yeah, that's weird. I've never done that and I don't want to.
Yeah. Speaking of plain cottage cheese, Yorgos Lanthimos is known for directing The Lobster. and the killing of a sacred deer.
Yeah. And as far as for my money, I mean, the lobster is pretty good, but it's very out there.
Both, killing of sacred deer is,
yeah, they're both very out there. Yeah. Killing of sacred deer is a little bit more interesting, a little bit more self-propellant. The lobster is very depressing.
I mean, I think both movies are pretty depressing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's, I mean, Killing a Sacred Deer is kind of trying to be depressing. It's trying to be like an intense thriller slash a little bit of a horror movie. The Lobster is definitely a dark comedy.
I don't know, I thought Killing of a Sacred Deer was a dark comedy as well. Just like,
what?
You didn't think it was a dark comedy? Like the scene, the scenes really got me. Killing of a Sacred Deer, like when they go to the corporate dinner and he's going to give a speech and he's talking with his friends and he's just like out of nowhere is like, my daughter had her first period today or something. Like, and
I was just he's insane. Yeah.
Yeah.
The surgeon who used to drink, he's a little crazy, but not on the same level. Maybe as it's got maybe like a very weird sense of humor, but the Lobster is more ostentatiously a comedy.
Yeah, I think the Lobster did have a little bit more levity. And I think part of that, too, was because of the actors in it, like John C. Reilly. Any scene with John C. Reilly was pretty great.
Yeah.
Although, oof, that scene where like they make him put his hand in a toaster. I was like, dude, this is kind of hard to watch. Like,
yeah, no, it's an intense movie. And so, and just like those movies, The Favorite is also pretty interesting. You've got Rachel Weisz back, who was in The Lobster.
Yes.
And it's about this movie takes place during the reign of Queen Anne, who famously was a little bit heavier and had a lot of medical issues, et cetera, et cetera. This takes place after the death of her husband, so it's just her. And Rachel Weisz plays the consigliere, if you will, to Queen Anne, her like top advisor and closest friend, as far as we can tell. Enter Emma Stone, who is she's the cousin of Rachel Weisz, right?
Yes. Yeah, she's the cousin of Rachel Weisz, and she is a peasant. Or she's a former lady who loses everything and goes to the castle to beg Rachel Weisz for a position within the castle.
Yeah. So slowly she becomes a assistant to Rachel Weisz and then slowly starts making her way up the social ladder, realizing that Queen Anne is the source of the favor.
Yeah.
And that all you need to do is court favor with Queen Anne and she can make anything happen.
Yeah. And from the get-go, I think that this movie is by far Yorgos's most approachable and most accessible film.
Right, which is interesting considering how psychosexual this movie is. Like,
oh, yeah. But it's also, I think, his funniest film. I thought this movie was hilarious.
The movie is very funny, and it's very beautifully shot. It's all natural light.
It's all natural lighting. It was shot in the Hatfield House, I think. Is that like that massive British house that every British period piece ever uses as a location?
Yeah. I mean, it looks like if you've seen period pieces, you've seen this movie. You've seen what it looks like. Just the costumes are great. The scenery is great. The production design is great. It's a fun movie to look at. And the way that Yorgos kind of treats it like a little fun house. It's a lot of planted cameras, a lot of pivots. It's almost like you're looking at an ant farm.
A lot of fishbowl lenses too, which was kind of surprising.
A lot of fishbowl. I thought this was a 90s skate video.
Yeah, I didn't really, it kind of took me by surprise the first time. And I thought there was going to be more of like a thematic purpose behind shooting certain scenes like that. But maybe I just didn't connect anything at first, but it just felt like he wanted to get the scope of the entire room into the shot. And it was difficult to do that with a standard lens.
Yeah, because I imagine the rooms were not designed from a filming perspective, even though they're huge. You've got these long hallways that Queen Anne has to be like wheeled down and a lot of interesting tracking shots. A lot of kind of following people, a lot of following people from the front. You're always kind of looking at their expression and seeing how everyone's playing off each other. What this movie does really well is show like the absolute power that the queen has and how that shapes how everyone's life is, you know? So you've got the more subdued approach of Rachel Weisz is like, oh, we're friends, but I also keep her in check. And then you've got Emma Stone, who's kind of like, I'm willing to like let things get a little crazy so I can gain favor and kind of maybe play up to the lesser tendencies of Queen Anne that are a little bit more self-destructive.
Yeah, how Emma Stone was willing to like just let her indulge. She was willing to satisfy Queen Anne's indulgences in order to gain favor. Whereas Rachel Weisz was like, by the time when we enter the film, Rachel Weisz had been in this relationship with Queen Anne for a while, and she kind of knew her tics and like knew how to control her. And even Rachel Weisz at moments was, I feel like, very manipulative towards Queen Anne, just in a very
definitely
in the opposite way that that Emma Stone starts trying to manipulate Queen Anne to gain her favor and propel herself up the social ladder.
Yeah, and I think it said something about the act of gaining favor in that type of environment that you have, you know, which is more, not necessarily moral, but the thing is, when there is someone who has absolute power, maintaining them is also a power in itself.
Oh, yeah.
Being able to control that and being able to wield it in a certain way and making sure that, you know, the whole country doesn't fall apart, because the queen can do whatever she wants. The queen can just say, like, here's all this. Like, if the queen really wanted to, a lot of decisions could be made directly from her.
Mm-hmm.
And so having an advisor there to kind of let her in on, you know, what the real world is like, because if you're raised in that type of royalty, you're not going to understand how the world works at all.
Yeah. And I was kind of curious in this movie, like I was wondering if we were going to see any outside views as to what the ramifications were of these two competing, I don't want to say mistresses, but
these maidens,
that's kind of what ends up happening in the film. We were going to have any implications as to what like the tax raises were going to have on the rest of the country. And you get snippets of like, so in the film, they're at war with France throughout the entire duration of the film.
Right.
And you get like stories from the war front and stories about peasants revolting because of tax hikes. But I did appreciate that this felt like an extremely focused film. Like, I don't think we left the castle grounds at all. Like, I think like there was one sequence where you leave the castle grounds,
right.
But it didn't take very long. But I did really enjoy what's his name? Nicholas Holt's character. I forget.
Holt has a great character in this. He plays
I forget his name, but he the leader of the opposition. The loyal opposition.
Yes. So he is not the prime minister, but the opposition leader. So you've got the government being represented by him, and also there's the prime minister is also involved. And you've got Queen Anne and Rachel Weisz and Emma Stone. So I think you really do get a peek into that. You can very easily throw a wrench in the royal politics. But I think maybe one of my issues with this movie, and it's a really well made movie, it was pretty entertaining, but one of my issues with this movie is I don't know what the message of this is, what the story is trying to say. I think it's trying to say a lot, but it seems very nihilistic at the end, and necessarily know if I got too much out of it from an arc standpoint.
I don't know. I feel like my interpretation of it, I'm pretty okay with, and I feel like I got what I wanted out of this film. I do agree that it's pretty nihilistic, and I think that if anything, it's more of a critique on that type of power, that like monarchy, and how essentially subjugation is going to happen regardless of how you play it, like how you play your rise to power or your climb up the social ladder. Like, there's always going to be somebody above you. Yeah, you're going to be subjugated, and you are replaceable. And I think that you really get a sense of that with the final shots and final crossfades of the film. I don't want to spoil anything that happens, but that's what I got walking out of this film.
Yeah, no, I think we're on the same page. And I guess I didn't mind the nihilism of his past two movies as much, because I think that there was a stronger story that was being driven, and that at some point the main characters you're seeing are operating within a stressful environment that is being acted on from outside forces, where you're kind of, you're sympathizing with the characters. And I think in this movie, we have a situation where the, I think one of the only character I really feel sorry for is Queen Anne, because her life has been, you know, absolutely demolished in tragedy, and she's got no hope. She can't re, you can't remarry.
Oh,
when you're the queen. I think it has a lot to say about gender politics.
Oh, absolutely.
And how you have, you know, if Queen Anne were a king, this wouldn't be happening. You know, it'd be a different type of movie.
Yeah.
You know, you see Queen Anne is you know, depressed and awful after getting gout, and King Henry the Eighth, you know, gets gout and he just starts eating and has a bunch of wives and tries to have kids. But there's two very different dynamics going on there. He, King Henry, changes the religion so he can marry someone else.
Yeah.
You know, and I wonder if without the historical context of this, does this movie matter as much? If it's not Queen Anne, if it's a made up queen who we don't know anything about, does it, does this movie work as well?
I mean, I think it depends on, like, if you were to make up a fictional queen for a story like this, I think you would still need to give the context of those gender politics and, like, the society that this monarchy exists in order to get the full power of the story that Yorgos is trying to tell. But I agree. I think that the only truly sympathetic character in this film is Queen Anne, which I wasn't expecting. Like, I kind of thought from... At first, I was like, oh, okay, so Emma Stone is supposed to be the audience character.
Yes,
in this film.
The outsider.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But that kind of, that pretty rapidly changes as you learn more and more about how, like, manipulative she is. And, like, she is, like, she's a smart character, clearly, because she knows how to work every player on the chessboard to get where she wants to be. And it all happens relatively quickly, I think, too.
Definitely, yeah.
But yeah, at the end, I was like, the character I really pitied the most was Queen Anne, because, like you were saying, she's completely alone, and everybody that is around her is only trying to manipulate her because of the power that she wields. Like, and I think that throughout the film, it's kind of her coming to terms with realizing that nobody actually cares about her.
Yeah, and I think there's a line in the movie that Rachel Weisz's character says to Queen Anne, is that the difference between me and everyone else is that I will never lie to you.
Yeah.
And it's about, what type of love do we really want? You know?
Yeah.
If, you know, to get philosophical, to that inside of ourselves, like, we have so much free will, we have the absolute power over ourselves. And what type of person do we want to be around? Do we want to be around someone who will validate everything that we say, that will, like, let us kind of do whatever we want? Or do we want somebody who cares about us and won't let us do things that they know that we actually shouldn't be doing?
Exactly. Do you want somebody that's going to say Kingdom Hearts is the greatest franchise ever, or that it's a terrible fucking game and that you shouldn't play it?
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Oh, the power of radical freedom.
Right. Radical freedom, man. That's my favorite event at the X Games.
That's
radical,
my favorite
freedom.
Rocket Power episode.
Yeah. There's another joke, but I'm not going to do it. And yeah, DM me in the comments, and I'll tell it to you. But overall, I think this movie I enjoyed it. I'm not sure if I got as much out of it as I got out of The Lobster or Killing a Sacred Deer. I think I'd like to watch this one again more readily than the other two.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's funny, and it's well acted. I think Rachel Weisz, Olivia Colman especially, and Emma Stone are all really good. Emma Stone's British accent is a little lacking, but I think she's fine. She's fine. She's good acting other ways.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest. I didn't even notice that she was really doing, like, a British accent in this film.
Yeah. So overall, I think this is actually one of those few movies where it is operating kind of on a film and flick basis. Like, this, it's a pretty entertaining movie.
Yeah,
I wouldn't say it's boring.
It's significantly more watchable than I thought it was going to be. Just going off of, like, Yorgos's previous two films, or well, the previous two films that I've seen.
Yeah,
like The Lobster and Killing of a Sacred Deer. While I appreciate the craft and talent behind those films, neither one of them is one that I was pretty eager to watch again. But this film, I would easily put on again, and it's a film I think I would easily recommend to friends, knowing that like more casual moviegoers, I think, can even get something out of this because it is funny. Like it's a legitimate comedy. It's not like a dark comedy. There is some darkness to it, but it's not as dark as like The Lobster or Killing of a Sacred Deer.
Right. It's not as openly nihilistic about.
Yeah. Like they're
the nature of humanity.
Yeah. The implications are there, but it's not as blatant with its themes and messages.
Yeah. So overall, I mean, I would say if you want to see one of the more arty Oscar nominations, this is the one that you should go for. It's pretty watchable. I think this is really like the only kind of arty Oscar nominee, right?
Yeah, that and Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yep. So much artistry. My mom saw Bohemian Rhapsody and she loved it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's a fucking crowd pleaser.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, everyone I think I've talked to who's seen it is like, yeah, no, I loved it. It was great.
Yeah. God, I've been seeing clips on Twitter go around though, and like I haven't seen Bohemian Rhapsody since I saw it in theaters, and all the stuff on Twitter is highlighting like just how bad the editing in that movie is, which I didn't even notice the first time I saw it, but watching it again I was like, oh man, I can't, this is Oscar worthy. It's rough.
Yep.
It's rough.
Yep. It's well, and I think that you can point out like some scenes definitely. I have a feeling that the way that movies are nominated and how that process goes is focused more on like the big scenes. So I think what people are looking at probably, I think it's really about the Live Aid scene.
Yeah.
I think that without that sequence, that movie is not as good.
No, I agree.
And it's not that good. Like it's fine. You know, I feel like everyone thinks that we fucking hate this movie.
It's an FX movie.
Right, yeah, this is an FX has the movies montage. Bohemian Rhapsody shooting up there with Ray and Walk the Line.
Yeah, and they're going to have
those movies
like,
are better than this movie,
behind
though.
Behind the scenes commercial breaks where they essentially just play the DVD extras during the commercial break. Oh,
yeah,
man.
Which, yeah, I mean, nobody's watching DVD extras anymore. That's the sad part. I feel like I used to watch, you know, like Lord of the Rings behind the scenes all the time.
Oh, yeah, dude. That's why I would buy like the Steelbook of Inception and The Dark Knight. I want to see Christopher Nolan talk about his craft.
Yeah. Talk to me about the film.
Yeah. It doesn't come with as like, I think it's because so many movies are on Netflix that I watch now and like Amazon. And, you know, you don't get those extras anymore.
Which I'm surprised because you think it'd be easy.
Right?
Yeah, but it's also like in the age where they're charging me like $20 for like movies that came out like 30 years ago. I'm like, all right, there's like, where's the bargain bin for this? You know, who is watching Flashdance that is making this cost $17? Come on.
How about those margins?
Yeah, but it's not like a thing. Just make it cost like $2.
Just give it to me. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think it's. Whatever, we can get into this at a whole other time, but just make myself heard.
We'll talk about the streaming wars when Disney finally launches their proprietary streaming service.
Disney Plus. See,
Disney Edition.
I feel like this is going to be the point where the FTC is going to come breaking down like the doors, because Disney has the ability to just put so much content on one streaming service that it's going to be the big TV stations all over again. It's going to be like, oh, Disney, like you get this package for $8, add another like dollar and you get all of ESPN. Like,
yeah, I wonder. That's going to be interesting. But I feel like you already kind of have that. Like I don't know if Disney Plus, though, as a streaming service is going to include like their television channels. Like, I wonder if there are laws preventing that, because
like, I bet there aren't.
you don't have Netflix offering channels for other properties. Like, you don't have Netflix offering any live stream channels or like bundles. Amazon, you can
but,
get
but
like
Hulu has a live TV package.
Yeah. But Hulu has multiple owners. Hulu is owned by Disney and NBC, and I forget what big three cable companies own Hulu. But yeah, I'm curious to see what happens between Hulu and Disney once Disney launches Disney Plus.
Yeah, I wonder if we're ever. Do you think we're ever going to get back to a point where people watch live things?
No. Sports, maybe. That's about it. Like sports and like
things
award
on
shows.
Like the actual networks. But will there be a point where it's just like not worth it to have the Oscars like on TV anymore? You know.
Probably. I think eventually we're just going to start seeing like Oscar live streams. I don't know. I think that once, like, you know,
it'll be like UFC fights. Like you can buy it on Amazon. It'll start streaming like when it starts.
Yeah. When the last boomer dies, that's when we're going to see the death of like proper cable television.
Yeah. It's a sad day because people will never watch something that they don't want to watch ever again.
Yeah. I mean, you could like, you know, that's kind of cool from a consumer perspective, but also it is kind of sad. Like I kind of miss having like a curated schedule, TV schedule.
Yeah, it almost makes you feel like you're not like completely alone.
Yeah, well, that's what I loved about, you know, growing up and watching Adult Swim going to bed. Like, I think Adult Swim is one of the best curated content networks of all time. And it's like, you know, you have that block of time from like 9 p.m. to like 4 a.m. or 6 a.m., whatever it ran to. And it really just felt like the network was actually interacting with its audience with like the bumpers and the music and the all the weird shit they would do in between the shows.
Yeah, 100%.
And how like they would like Adult Swim just did such a good job with introducing foreign television shows to audiences that wouldn't watch it otherwise, especially now without like before the advent of YouTube. You were watching anime that like at least I was watching anime that I would never have heard about without Adult Swim telling me about it, or like listening to musical artists that I would never have heard about without Adult Swim playing them during like one of the bumpers.
Yeah,
and I feel like that is definitely something that we're never going to get again.
Right. Future generations will never watch Air Force One 3 times in one Sunday and therefore be able to name big parts of the dialogue just at hand.
Yeah.
You know, it's we're getting to the part of our culture, and I feel like I'd sound like a Luddite, but I'm not, I promise. But I miss like more of the social interactions of like shows, you know, where everyone's like,
oh yeah, everybody watches the same thing.
That's a great
thing
about HBO. Yeah. Yeah, we're all watching, you know, the episodes as they come out of that. Oh, did you see that episode Sunday night? But now when people talk about Netflix shows, it's like, hey, are you watching this show? Like, yeah, I finished it. Let me know like, when you finish it.
Right?
And then we can say three things about it where it's like, yeah, that was cool, right? Yeah, super cool.
Yeah.
And you forget what happened like at any number. You're missing out on valuable social interaction.
Everybody's
you know?
Entertainment clocks are just all over the place now. Nothing is consistent anymore. And it does make conversations weird, but also maybe we could just be less fucking nerdy and talk about things other than entertainment. Like,
like what?
Sports.
Oh,
just kidding.
Yeah.
Dude,
Let's get back to sports.
I'd never fucking talk about sports. You kidding? You see how hard that guy hit that ball? Yeah, man, that was sick.
Yeah. Hey, don't you like watching it's the same like watching like good acting. You're like, that guy's doing the best thing like ever for his profession, except it's like watching like Tom Cruise do like the crazy stunts. You're just like, I want to see a guy do something that I would never want to do ever.
I feel
that
like
would seriously injure me.
There's so much more flexibility with that, though.
Well, yeah, because we have like a set number of sports, you mean?
Yeah. And also just the rules within sports are also like, I feel like most people have done the same thing in sports multiple times.
Yeah, but I would also argue the liveness of it makes it so there's like more insane moments. So like if there's six big stunts in a Tom Cruise movie that comes out every like 3 or 4 years in a football, football Sunday, there's got to be more than six amazing plays that happen where you're like, oh man, I'm losing my mind over what they just did.
Yeah, I don't know.
I never thought I'd be arguing about sports programming on a movie podcast, but here we go.
Look at what you've done, Dan.
Yeah.
Reel it in.
So let's recommend this movie or not. Let's
I think we did recommend this movie, but we can reconfirm the recommendation.
Yeah, I recommend. See this movie.
Yeah, see this movie. Works as a film and a flick. It's both art house and approachable. Honestly, this is one of my favorite films of the year. I thought this movie was fucking great.
I don't know if it's in my top 10, but it's definitely the top, probably top 20.
It's definitely above Bohemian Rhapsody.
Definitely above Bohemian Rhapsody. Yeah. Did you do the final count of how many movies you watched?
Not yet.
In the year?
I can check that real quick. But how many did you watch?
Oh, a lot. I think it was in the 80s.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you think about it, if we're watching a movie every year, or not every year, every week,
did you use Letterboxd to see?
Oh, yeah, definitely. They have the year in review or something. And you can go see what your deal is at the very bottom.
Yeah, I can't find it. Oh well.
Yeah, we'll figure it out later.
It was probably a lot. I'm trying to. Oh, my most average rating though was what is this? 3.5 stars. It's pretty standard, I think. Pretty good.
Yeah,
pretty
it's like median. You like the movies that you see generally.
Yeah. I try not to waste money on shit movies, but, you know, that's also what I'm happy about Netflix putting more crazy-ass movies out there. I like being able to watch a movie that's bad, but still get enjoyment out of it because I didn't spend money on it.
That is true. And that's one of the good things about TV or, HBO is that you're like, huh, I would never pay to see this movie.
Oh, yeah.
But if you're offering it for free right now,
yeah,
I'm into that.
It's like The Book of Henry is on HBO right now. So if you have HBO,
really?
Go fucking watch The Book of Henry. You are not going to regret it. It's a terrible movie, but you are going to remember it forever. And it's free if you have HBO.
So the two movies that you've said are terrible but awesome to me are Polar, starring Mads Mikkelsen, and The Book of Henry. And you gave A Book of Henry half a star, and you gave Polar 5 stars.
Yes. So watch Polar first. So Polar, I had fun watching on my own and just laughing at how ridiculous the situations were. Book of Henry, you got to get drunk with a bunch of friends and all watch it at once and all experience the twists that movie has to offer together. That is a communal experience.
Okay. Well, yay to that. Cheers to that.
Cheers.
Let's wrap this up. You know what it is. I've been Dan Leo. Been your A-host from the Polar Vortex. And you can follow me on Twitter at The Dan Leo Show. I got to tweet more.
No, you do.
Yeah, I do. It's the only way I can connect with Robert. He won't answer my texts.
Yeah.
And I only send them at 3 a.m., but that's still not a good reason to just completely ignore me.
We only converse publicly. That's why you got to get on Twitter.
Right, yeah. That was part of the court settlement. I forgot.
Yeah, it's part of our new accountability initiative as well. Everybody knows what we're saying.
Yeah, it's a move of restraining order. All communications with us have to be public. You'll get the deleted scenes from this podcast later, including with the lost episode.
If you subscribe to us on Patreon.
Yeah, you know, Letterboxd, the username is DLeo. Hit me up. I'm always doing fun stuff. And then the podcast website, which we got to renew that domain soon. Nobody steal our domain. viewingangles.podcast.com. And, you know, the Twitter at viewingangles. We're here every week. What's your deal, Rob? How do people communicate with you?
You can follow me on Twitter and Letterboxd and Instagram at Robert Jr. JR. I've been tweeting a lot about Kingdom Hearts 3 and how that entire franchise is shit. So I am ready to get into a fight. Fight me on Twitter. That's my pitch.
Fight me on Twitter. Oh, man. Okay. So next week, there's only one movie that's getting all the movies are getting limited releases, but one's getting 2000 plus, and it's Miss Bala.
We're not seeing that. We're going to watch Velvet Buzzsaw on Netflix starring Jake Gyllenhaal about a haunted art gallery from the director of Nightcrawler.
Oh, yeah. Dan Gilroy. Yeah,
yes.
When does that start streaming?
February 1st.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
It has good reviews.
I'll commit to that.
Yeah, it's got an 82% on Rotten Tomatoes right now.
Stop talking to me about Rotten Tomatoes like it means anything.
It means everything.
What does Bohemian Rhapsody have on Rotten Tomatoes?
60%.
Did you just... Oh, yeah, no, 60. Okay, you're right.
See, I'm just psychic like that.
Just lean. I'm a Metacritic guy. I'll say it.
I think Metacritic is a more fair aggregate, review aggregate. I think Rotten Tomatoes and its binary system is kind of bullshit.
Yeah, but you also like you got to read Metacritic in a certain way. It's you got to know that if something's like a 66, you're like, well, that's like less than 3 stars. Like, it's probably not that good. It's like, nah, that's not the way you got it. You got to go into the reviews. You got to read some of the tags and stuff.
Yeah,
and figure out who gave them the bad. You got to get into Metacritic.
If you really
Metacritic sponsor us.
Yeah. Metacritic, please sponsor us. But if you really want like a good review system, just find some critics that you agree with, like at least 70% of the time, just follow them on Twitter and social media or whatever their website is. And then just go by their recommendations. Like, that's honestly the most reliable way to find out if a movie that you're excited for is worth your time or not, is just find somebody who has similar tastes as you and see what they think of a movie. Like, there are plenty of movies on Rotten Tomatoes that have gotten great scores and have gotten bad scores that I disagree with intensely.
Oh, yeah.
But
you
like,
know, I wonder, that would be a good like program to have if you like you review like 10 movies and then it'll match you with like a critic who agrees with you. Like, it'll give you 10 movies that are like really divisive.
Tinder for, yeah, like fucking Tinder for movie critics.
Yeah. I mean, if I were
you get a movie and you swipe right or left on whether you liked it or not, that'd be kind of cool.
Yeah. And then it matches like, hey, this person who does it professionally shares your viewpoint.
Yeah. Copyright viewing angles. Nobody make that fucking app.
Right. Yeah. It's okay. Intent is matters and stuff. So we could point to this. Don't worry.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's recorded. It's public. We get it. All right. Well, let's get off.
Yeah. There's some.
All right. We'll see you next week. Our viewing anglers.
Viewing
angels.
Viewing angels.
Viewing angels. Oh boy. Okay.
I just love Christianity so much.
Yeah, I know you do.
Bye.
Bye.